us. There is that part of us, of course, that's human, that just does. We see what we want to see. We see what we expect to see. There is this sense of selective vision that we have. All you have to do is sit down with somebody and watch the basketball games this month, and it's amazing how your team never gets any of the breaks, and the other team, you swear, the referees have obviously been paid off, because it is so clear. It is obvious when you go and you talk to someone and from your own political persuasion, or you talk to somebody else, and it's just amazing how they can't see that the other side is so corrupt, and they're just not even being honest. And if they would just admit it, and we could all get, we have this selective vision. That's just part of what it is to be human. Maybe you saw some of that this week in yourself. And then there are those times when it gets a little bit larger than just selective vision. There's that part where we think we see. I thought I knew what I saw until I saw what I didn't know. You've heard me talk about an experience I did that with when it comes to understanding God and God's love. And so I'll just share it briefly again, because I think it is so important to this particular point of I knew about God's love. I had experienced God's love. I had taught about God's love. I'd gone to seminary, for crying out loud, and I was a minister. So you're supposed to know about God's love. And I did. I thought I knew. I thought I knew what I saw. And as I have shared before, all that changed one night in the room of my daughter, as she's about one and a half years old. And as I come in, and it's one of those times when as a parent, you just can't believe you can survive with so little sleep. And you walk in and pick up my daughter, and just thinking, oh, if you would just relax and just know that you're loved, for crying out loud, it's okay. And that sense, it wasn't a voice, but it was a certain nudge for something that was trying to push into my consciousness. And how long have I been trying to tell you the same thing? And this question that arose of, that can't be, because if you loved me the way that I love my daughter, I mean, well, that would be amazing. And just that moment of grace of, no, it's more than that. And that passage that it comes to mind, can you see how you are a parent, and how just how frail and feeble you love, how much more your Father in heaven? And it changed something in me. It didn't radically change everything in my, it took a while for it to sink in, but at that point I could say, I thought I knew what I saw when I talked about God, and then I saw what I didn't know. I had a similar experience, not quite as powerful, when I thought I knew about partnership and how it is that we partner in mission and what that is, and had led mission trips and had helped orchestrate and be a part of some of the things we do, including Zimbabwe. I thought I knew what I saw when I was singing partnership and mission, and then I went to Zimbabwe, and then I saw what I didn't know. I didn't know anything about partnership. I was coming with eyes that were blinded. I was first world coming to a third world. I was coming as a donor to a recipient, and it was in that moment of being in the presence of people, and it flipped around and goes, oh, I get what partnership is and how much I have to learn and how much gives and receives in both directions. I thought I knew what I saw until I saw what I didn't know. All of that is a way of talking about our passage this morning and the passage that's in front of us, because there is something that's going on in this passage, and it has to do with how we understand and how we see, and it has something to do with vision. It has something to do with what we think we see, and then we begin to see what we missed. And part of the story is actually being told by where this story is. So what I want to tell you this morning is that our passage that I'm going to be reading, it's going to sound familiar, and there's great stuff in it. But what's just as important to know is that this half the story is where this story is and why it's there. We started this series about the Gospel of Mark, and Mark is one of those books that was written about, mid-60s, 70s, not that the stories weren't around, but somebody finally decided to put all that together, and I believe, and not alone in this, that the reason had to do with the sense that Jerusalem had just been leveled. And when I mean leveled, it had just been utterly destroyed. And not just the city, but all the hopes and all the expectations of what the Messiah was going to do. Because the Messiah was coming to restore Jerusalem. It was coming to restore the nation of Israel. And rather than being restored, it was absolutely decimated. And the question is, well, so now what? We know on the one hand that Christ rose from the dead. We were expecting Christ to come back. And if you read some of the early things in the scriptures, there's this, the disciples on down. When are you coming to restore everything? And now we begin to understand Jesus' reticence, because it wasn't going to be a quick fix. Now is going to mean, this is what it means to follow. This is what it means to be following the Son of Heaven on an earth where everything has gone to hell. Now what do we do? And so the book of Mark was not written so that we could chronicle everything about Jesus. That's part of it. But more importantly is, what does it mean and what do we need to do if we're going to continue to follow this Messiah, this one who we say is the anointed one of God? What do we need to know? And what we need to know is some of the things we thought we saw. So it tells a story. There's this pattern. And I won't go into it, that's a whole different Bible study. But there's this pattern, because sometimes the Bible sets a pattern up by the stories that it tells, one after another after another. And then it goes back and it tells the same thing, one after another after another. When it does that, usually you could say, I need to pay attention here, there's something I'm supposed to see. And what we're supposed to see culminates with the story that Aaron just read for us. And it's this most interesting and amazing kind of story of healing. It's the only story like it in the Bible, which should put a little flag for us right there. It is the story of healing somebody. Nothing so surprising about that. But did you notice that in this story, the person wasn't healed after the first touch? That Jesus had to go back and then touch again in order to clear it up. Now, this is an odd story. We would notice this, and certainly back then they would notice. It's like, what other miracle did Jesus ever do? What a lame person did Jesus heal, and then they limped around for a while. Says, oh, wait, come back. Let's. What other dead person did Jesus raise from the dead, and then go, they were still kind of groggy. Oh, we got to fix this a little bit. Nobody. This isn't a matter of power. This isn't a matter of the limits of Jesus. This has to do with the kind of healing that needs to take place, and the distinct story here is that there needed to be a second touch. That's interesting enough in and of itself, but the very next story is our story, and it's this story of Peter and this encounter with Jesus in this wonderful encounter. So let me continue, because sometimes in the Bible, what we do is we chop it up, this little story and this little story and this little story, and so we miss that sometimes the message is that there is a flow here, and the very structure is trying to tell us something. So it's not surprising then, in the middle of the gospel, in the hinge of this, between all that has been and now what is yet to be, there is this story. Jesus is now with his disciples and says, tell me, who do people say that I am? And they said, some of you say you are John the Baptist. And others answered, others say that you're Elijah, while others say that you are one of the prophets. Well, what about you? Jesus asked them. Who do you say that I am? And Peter answered, you are the Messiah. And then Jesus ordered them not to tell anyone. This is always one of those surprising things, but it is setting it up, and somehow you get the sense of that there's something still that's not quite right. Sometimes when I was growing up and I was told about this story and I would read it for myself and sometimes even taught it this way, that this is a story about the beginning. This is when Peter became a Christian, because he had the right thing to say about Jesus. But I think Peter became a Christian, a follower of Jesus, when he dropped his nets several chapters back. And I think there were things to learn. Maybe it's because Peter is the first one to finally recognize. Well, he may have been the first one amongst the 12, but if you just go back even in the book of Mark, let alone the other Gospels, other people spotted this a lot sooner. So this isn't about the first time. Now, this story is here, and this particular story and what it's telling us and right here why it's telling us is because there's something else that needs to take place, and we get a sense of it by the very next passages. And Jesus went on to say, the Son of Man must suffer much and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, the teachers of the law. He will be put to death, but 3 days later he will rise to life. And he made this very clear to them. And so Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But Jesus turned around and looked at his disciples and rebuked Peter. Get away from me, Satan, he said. Your thoughts don't come from God, but from human nature. You see, I think the idea of seeing a Messiah in Jesus was easy. We know that people were being spotted and called out as being messiahs every day, every week, every month. It was the messiah du jour of those days. Finding and spotting messiahs was not the hard part. What the hard part was is that Peter had recognized that in Jesus, and this story is here where it is, because in a sense he's saying, I can see, but it's like people walking around like trees. It's not quite clear yet. And Jesus is saying, so let me come back, and the rest of the Gospel of Mark is a second touch. The rest of the Gospel is about clarifying Peter's vision about who Jesus was and what Jesus was going to do. And it was seeing the destiny of the Messiah, not in conquering the enemies, but submitting to them. Not overcoming, but going to the cross. And that's what I thought too. And that's as far as my vision would go for a number of years, because it was so clear. I thought I knew what I saw when I read the Bible, and then I began to see what I didn't know. That Jesus, it's not wrong that Jesus had come as the Messiah. It's not wrong that Jesus had said he was talking about going to the cross. It's just incomplete, because the very next thing is Jesus saying, if any of you want to come with me, you must forget yourself. Carry your cross and follow me. For if you want to save your own life, you'll lose it. But if you lose your life for me and for the gospel, you will save it. Do you gain anything if you win the whole world but lose your life? Of course not. There's nothing you can give to regain your life. Anybody wants to follow me, you're going to have to forget yourself. You're going to have to pick up your cross. So in other words, what Jesus is saying in this story that's right there in the center, that's trying to get our attention, that's trying to help us understand what we don't see, it's not just Jesus you don't understand. It's yourself. Now for Peter, this was to become physically true. In fact, by the time this gospel was put together, it's probably likely that Peter had already been killed. So this would resonate with the readers, because this would be fresh knowledge. But this isn't here just because it has to do with Jesus, just because it has to do with Peter. This has to do with anybody who wants to follow. In this world of no quick fixes, in this world where we would love to escape from the suffering and death of the world, Jesus is saying, you don't get to escape it. I get to go in it with you. And this idea of suffering and this idea of death is not just something just for Jesus on the cross. It's not even just for the people who are to immediately follow. It turns out that if you want to follow Christ, that suffering and death becomes, and then resurrection, becomes the template for the way we do our life. This is the pattern for all of life. Now, if that sounds a little off-putting to you, and maybe even a little angering to you, then you understand Peter taking Jesus and going, wait, we need to work on this message a bit. No one's going to follow you with that. So let's figure out how we can. And Jesus is so strong, he's just saying, get behind me. You're thinking like Satan. You're coming at this from human nature. You're not coming at this from God, because this is part of what Christ came to reveal. This is part of what Christ came to do, is to show us this is the way of life. And it's not enough just to get the names right. It's not enough just to get the doctrines right, to say that you're the Messiah, that you're the Lord, you're the Savior. Yes, of course. And let me show you what that means when you say that. Because we would love, and how many of us would love it if by doing that, that meant that we got to skip over all the pain, suffering, and death of our lives? How many of us would wish that there were some things that if you just know this doctrine, if you just know this truth, then you can have a life that skirts around all the destruction? How many of us have prayed prayers that would do that? How many of us would go to programs for the five easy steps for a great marriage? The three wonderful things you need to know to be a wonderful parent? The seven principles of being successful in business? And every one of these supposes that if you just get the right doctrines, if you just get the right ideas, if you just have the right concepts, then you get to avoid all the problems. And if you're having problems, you just don't have the right doctrines yet. There's something seductive about that. But what faith is worth anything if it doesn't deal with the actual sufferings and problems of life? That's just the self-help aisle down the library. Nothing wrong with self-help, but it just doesn't get to the guts of what it means to be a human in our human experience. I'm going to contend this story is one of those ways that it is saying with loud and clear, and by the way, it doesn't get to the heart of what it means to be a follower of Jesus either. That the template of life, the pattern that Jesus came to show is you don't get to go around it, and I'm not your pass and ticket around all those things. I'm the presence that walks through it. And on the other side, by the way, is real life. On the other side is transformation. On the other side is resurrection, because all of those things are real, but they're not permanent. And so we go through those things. He made this very clear to them, our passage tells us. And it's not easy to see, and you can't see it all at once. I sure haven't. And I think that's why it's in the middle of this gospel, because the rest of the journey is about getting that kind of vision for yourself. But we kind of know it already, don't we? I mean, show me a parent that doesn't know this already, that if you're going to be a good parent, it means letting go of your ego, your pride, your time, your control, your comfort, and all the things that you were hoping to do that day, that year, for the rest of your life. And you do it, and you do it willingly, because on the other end, you see there's life. And you find that at the end of it, there's not less of you, there's more of you. Show me a marriage that doesn't understand this, and I'll show you a marriage that hasn't existed for very long. Where you have to let go of your pride and your righteousness and all the things, and you give yourself over, and it's in doing that that new life can come out. Show me a church where people don't give themselves and sacrifice and offer themselves with their time and their money and their talent and the resources. And I'll show you something that's pretty much like a country club. And thank God we have people here who do all of those things, so we get to be who we are. And we stand on the shoulders and are benefiting of that every day. Show me a teacher who doesn't understand that. Show me a policeman, a fireman. Show me anyone who serves who doesn't understand that it is in giving yourself away completely is the secret to somehow, in ways that we can't explain, somehow you find yourself being made complete. Because this is what Christ is showing us. This is the way of life. This isn't the interruption. This isn't the exemption. This is the rule. If you want to follow me, forget about yourself. Pick up your cross, take it up, let go, and do all of those things. And it is this the way, the truth, and the life is not just a set of beliefs that you hold. It is a way that you live that becomes transformed. And it's hard. And there are places we can go where they will tell us a different message. Turn on the TV today and there'll be people who will tell you a whole different message. There's times in my life I probably would have told you something different. Because that's when I thought I knew what I saw when I read this passage, and then I saw what I didn't know. And when you begin to see that, then you begin to see, and the scriptures just jump out at you, and all the times that this keeps coming up and all the ways that this is showing up. So here's how I would suggest you try this week. And it's just something that's a week old in my own life. And it was a woman who gave sort of a spiritual exercise, if you will, that was as simple as saying, here's the things that you want to hang on to. And then when you find yourself doing it, then just do this. Just let go. Just take your hands like this. And when you find yourselves angry or you find yourselves getting anxious about something, just do this. And I started doing that this week. I said, when I got anxious, I would just do this. When I get myself frustrated, just do this. When I was trying to find myself being defensive, just do this. And it is, I have to tell you, it's a goofy thing, and you feel a little self-conscious. And it works. There is something tangible about doing that. When you're in an argument this week, do this. And you're standing in line and you're frustrated because every other line's going so fast, and why is this line going so... When you're on the freeway and your lane is not going anywhere and the person in front of you just cuts you off and you... Well, don't let go of the steering wheel. Hang on to the steering wheel, but mentally. And just know that this is part of the pattern of life. This is what God has given us to do, that if you want to understand what Christ has come to do, if you want the life that Christ is offering, it has to do with letting go of those things that we thought were so important, the control, the security, the power, the ego, the pride, the certainty. Because it's in doing that that there's the possibility of resurrection. Show me someone who doesn't go through and understand who's ever felt betrayed and or needs forgiveness. There was this wonderful interview I saw with Brené Brown. It's been around for a while. Brené Brown's the sociologist who does the sociology by gathering up hundreds, thousands of stories and finding the common themes around it. And she was talking about a book that she was trying to put together and this issue. She knew forgiveness was really important, but she couldn't find the center of gravity. She couldn't find the thing that had enough resonance, that it was always true, that you could find throughout the system. And then she said, I was listening to a sermon in a ministry who said, when it comes to forgiveness, if in order for forgiveness to be, something has to die. And the lights went on. She said she and her staff went back and started to go through all the hundreds and thousands of interviews, and they saw it. Grief. There was something that had to die for forgiveness to take place. You have to let go of the relationship you thought you had. You have to let go of the things that you thought you were entitled to. You have to let go of the idea that something is fair. If you're going to forgive, something has to die. It is this. And it's only there that something new can take place. Only there that a relationship can be healed. Only there that something can come out of the ashes and there is something that is transformed. So if it is in parenting, if it's at work, if it's at church, it's in relationships, if it's on the freeway, if it's in line, then maybe Jesus knows what he's talking about when he talks about this is the way to live and this is what I have come to do. And then it gives me a new way of understanding this prayer that was supposedly, it's never been proven, but supposedly comes that Confederate soldier's prayer, that one that was found on a soldier who had died at Gettysburg, his stuff. And it was a letter that he had written to his wife. And I began to read it with new eyes this week as I thought about this. He says, I asked for God for strength that I might achieve, and I was made weak, that I might learn humbly to obey. I asked for health that I might do greater things. I was given infirmity that I might do better things. I asked for riches that I might be happy. I was given poverty that I might be wise. I asked for power that I might have the praise of men. I was given weakness that I might feel the need for God. I asked for all things that I might enjoy life. I was given life that I might enjoy all things. I got nothing I asked for, but got everything I had hoped for. And almost despite myself, my unspoken prayers were answered. I am among all people most richly blessed. There is a reason why this story is here. There is a reason why this story is right where it is, saying the thing, and it has to do with the healing of our vision, the things we thought we knew that we saw until we saw what we didn't know. The death and resurrection isn't a one-time thing just for Jesus. It is the pattern of what it means to be in life. And it is in there that we have the courage to trust and to give it over, because we know that that's not the last word. We trust because when we begin to sense that, that's where resurrection comes. And resurrection is the last word, and new life is the right last word. That there is a way, and it is the way of God. And in that way, we understand, maybe for the first time, what it means that God is for us. So good and gracious God, help us this day that we not, that we don't stay blind. That when we are challenged, when we have been given something that we might do that requires us to give ourselves away, we don't fight it. We welcome it. Because in so doing, what we are doing is welcoming you. and that the cure for our selective vision is to let go of all the things we think are supposed to happen, that we might receive what is yet to be. And it's in Christ's name we pray. Amen.